How's it going? And welcome to episode 166 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin Hastings is at Hasting Kevin on the Twitter. We've got a great show for you. A whole bunch of news went down this week, Kevin, and we are going to talk about it all. Of course, we got recommendations for consideration for fab pickups in the 11th fab run of the 2024 season this Sunday evening. Before we get into all that, Kevin, glad to be back here with you. How's your week been going for you?
Oh, it's been going pretty well, Adam. Hope yours has as well. First official day of summer vacation here in the household, as yesterday was the final day of school for my daughter. So we're off and running.
We experienced that over a week ago. Yep. And it has been as somebody who's like new to the summer, you know, having a job during the summer when my kid is now home from school, it is something I'm getting used to, and it is not an easy task. And she's exiting six, she's 8 years old. So, you know, she has a little bit enough autonomy to like do what she needs to do in the house to keep herself occupied, but not quite old enough where I'm just like, just, you know, do whatever, you go somewhere and whatever.
A couple more years, Adam. It is so nice. Nah. I don't expect to see my daughter for the next 2.5 months. Like literally, she's going to be gone for half of that.
Sure.
So I'm exaggerating on the other half of the summer, but yeah, once just a little older, and they do things on their own, then it's no more getting to school, no more getting home from school. We have other things to deal with as the kids.
Oh, sure. New problems take their place.
New problems take their place. Exactly. But my schedule freed up quite a bit for the next couple of months.
There we go. Yeah, we got this summer just required a lot of planning. It's like, all right, how many week-long day camps can we put her in? How many can we afford? And then, you know, how much does she actually want to do? So we got two in there, and then we got
nice
family vacays. We're figuring it out. Kind of one of those things you figure out as you go.
Exactly.
Such is life, but we're going to figure some stuff out here as we go through all of the notes. You see what I did there? I've done this before, and I feel like I have to call it out, and that ruins it. I know, I understand. But that segue was pretty good. we're going to get into these news items here. Unfortunately, we do have to start with injury news. Let's start in Arizona, Kevin, where I haven't seen an official word of an IL stint. Please correct me if I just missed it, but Zach Gallen did leave his last.
I have seen that became official today. Yes.
Okay, great. Not the word I should have used, but thank you for clarifying. Zach Gallen hits the IL now after leaving his last start with a left hamstring injury. I'm assuming you're holding on to Gallen where you got him and going to ride this out to see when he comes back. But what are we seeing in Arizona as far as the opportunity lying ahead for other pitchers in the rotation?
It's interesting. Yeah. So Zach Gallen been underperforming sure. expectations a little bit anyway recently. We don't know if something was bothering him before, you know, we actually had an official injury. If he tweaked it a little more and that made it more official, that's kind of my hope, right? I hope that this gives us something to blame the underperformance on for Zach Gallen a little bit. As far as Arizona going forward, it's going to be the same guys we have seen throughout the season, I believe. Ryan Nelson has already been back. We've seen Brandon Fott. We've seen Slade Cecione. Jordan Montgomery's still there. So I think they're okay at least until Tuesday is when Slade Cecione comes up, when it would be his turn. And he has been pitching for them this season and starting for them in the rotation. So I expect that to be the case. That's how Roster Resource has it. Then they also have Blake Walston starting on Thursday at San Diego. I don't have a lot of interest here because San Diego has been okay against lefties. At least they don't strike out at all, like 14% strikeout rate versus lefties. So I really don't have a lot of interest there. He has performed pretty well in the eight innings he has so far this season, one start. 35 plus innings at AAA this season. His ERA is 4.5. I know ERA isn't what we want to base our decisions on. It's the first thing that pops up when we pull up the page. His FIP and XFIP are both over a run higher than that. So not a lot of interest here. So I think it's Cecione that we might have a little bit of interest based on matchups. And that's about it going forward until Gallen gets back, which is hopefully the minimum or close to it.
Walton is slated, obviously, to start for Arizona on Saturday as well. Arizona already come forward and letting him know that he'll start there. So by the time you're listening to this on Sunday, if you're not watching us live on Friday night, you'll already know how that turned out. So you have a little bit more information going into the Fab run as far as what to expect out of him. But it does look like he'll be the one to kind of stick in there and fill that gap unless he completely blows up and Arizona has to, you know, turn around and make a different move.
You know, as much as I bring up Eno Saris on the show throughout the season, and Nick Pollock talks about when he says something, listen, he's really not interested in unless things are just really work out well in pitchers that do not have a good fastball. His 2024 FanGraphs prospects reports are a 30 grade fastball, both current and future. So that also factors into my absolutely no interest in Blake Walston here.
All right. Yeah, definitely something to consider is there. This is not getting much better. At least not according to those scouting reports. All right, another IL stint that has become official is Clark Schmidt. He hits the IL for the Yankees with a right lat strain. He's not even going to throw, Aaron Boone said, for at least 4 to 6 weeks. So he is a good 2 months away at minimum from return, or the possibility of returning from this injury. Is this a point where, you know, as good or as moments as Schmidt has had, you have no IL slots? Is this kind of an easy drop at this point in the season? We're already hitting June and, you know, we've only got about 4 months left. He's going to miss at least two of them. Who's to say how he's going to come back in August and how much they're going to actually ride him through the end of the season? What's your thoughts on Schmidt here?
Yeah, unfortunately, he is an easy drop for me, even in 15s. As well as he has performed, there still was a question when Gerrit Cole comes back, which is relatively soon. We're getting into probably handful of weeks here. We should see Gerrit Cole back, and the question was, how do you kick either Luis Gil or Clark Schmidt out of the rotation the way they have performed? And one of them, it was probably going to happen to. Well, now we know the answer. Luis Gil is safe for those rostering him. Clark Schmidt, a drop, in my opinion, even in 15s for those rostering him. And I am intrigued by Cody Poteet, who it appears will hold the spot down until Gerrit Cole returns. He's got a pretty nice landing spot for himself at San Francisco once again on Saturday, as we're recording on Friday. But for our purposes, and our fantasy leagues. Unless you're in daily pickup leagues, I would start Poteet on Saturday. For those watching live right now, I probably would at San Francisco when I need an extra pitcher for the weekend. But LA Dodgers be his first start on our NFBC and other weekly fab leagues. So not the greatest landing spot, but he's probably going to be around 3, 4, 5 weeks. So this is the week to grab him for a couple bucks. Next week, he might be much more expensive, especially if he goes out and deals against the Dodgers.
Yeah, if he can kind of show something that, you know, maybe you're not expecting enough to actually start him in this, then yeah, he'll obviously be a lot more expensive moving forward. Another smaller IL move, or maybe just smaller based on rostership, but that is Kyle Muller hit the IL with a left shoulder tendonitis for the Oakland Athletics. They bring back Hogan Harris, who had some spot starts last year that seemed like he could actually put something together, and then other spots that was made it pretty obvious he could not. But he's going to be back in the rotation, at least in the short term, for Oakland moving forward. Any interest in Harris kind of taking the spot and running with it? Has he shown any kind of improvements from what we saw at the end of last year?
Maybe, but I'm not interested due to the upcoming schedule. You know, I don't think there's enough here that I think he's going to be enough better that I want to use him going forward. It appears that he's going to start this coming week versus Seattle, and then at San Diego probably next week. Two teams that I will bring this up again later, but I already brought it up once. Both of these teams perform much better against left-handed starting pitching than right-handed. So that steers me away, especially in the strikeout category. Both of these teams, two teams that are pretty easy to attack as far as strikeouts go, both of them over the last 3 weeks striking out less than 14% against left-handed pitching. So for that's the reason I'm out here.
Yeah, ended last season at the major level with a not a sub, a more than 7 ERA, 7.14 through just 63 innings pitched for Harris. You know, has a couple innings under his belt at the major league level so far this year, but nothing over his last outing, 5 2/3, one earned run, 7 strikeouts. So the strikeouts have the opportunity of being there. They just usually come with a big caveat of not having control and moving forward. So it's nice to know when he does get the outs, there's the opportunity of it being a strikeout, but at what cost? At what cost? For Hogan Harris. Okay, we got a couple. I'm going to get away from the injuries. We got a couple of returns here for different teams. Both in the outfield here with Stephen Kwan returning to the Cleveland Guardians, and then Josh Lowe expected to rejoin the Rays in a couple days as well on Tuesday. Which of these two are you excited to get back in your lineups if you have them? And then which one do you think moves right back into regular playing time more so than the other, if either?
Well, Stephen Kwan's the leadoff hitter for Cleveland when he's healthy. So that the second part of your question is the easiest to answer for me. I think Josh Lowe gets plenty of playing time as well, but Stephen Kwan is the leadoff hitter for the Guardians. And that is going to be hard sitting here on Friday as we're recording. I apologize for hesitating there. It's just, I was thrown for a little bit of a loop here on Friday's lineup, right? I did not think that Tyler Freeman would only drop to second. I really thought he'd move further down in the lineup. I didn't think this would just be move everybody down. However, they're facing a left-handed starter.
There you go.
So we're not sure how this is going to work with, with Tyler Freeman once they face right-handed starters. We got to watch this over the weekend. I'm afraid Tyler Freeman's going to lose plate appearances, not only from dropping in the lineup, but maybe, you know, a game or two, a week or so, as Kwan is getting those starts now. So Tyler Freeman, who some people were starting to come around on, David Fry, who is just way outperforming anything anybody expected. Both of these guys are probably going to lose at least some plate appearances. Hopefully not too many. I think Tyler Freeman loses the most here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah, when they see a different handed pitcher, how that lineup turns out, and you know, it goes into what we're gonna. It plays into what we're gonna talk about here next, which obviously is the big news happened the very beginning of the week. Affected it probably, and you know, and ended up affecting not a whole lot of Fab, as it didn't anything became official until after Fab came about. But of course, Ronald Acuña Jr. Remaining of his season is over with a torn ACL. He will be 100% dropped during this Fab period. Or unless you're just not paying attention and you're just sad, you're just too sad to drop him. I totally understand that. But he won't be playing baseball this year. And Atlanta went ahead and signed Ramon Laureano to a minor league contract. Supposedly, in my opinion, you know, just to add some depth. Laureano already cut loose by the Guardians after pretty much going 0 for 80. Or something. So he just was not very good, or at least not producing at any kind of level. So he will, you know, try to fight his way into the Atlanta lineup at some point. But besides the loss of Acuña, obviously impacting fantasy lineups, what other fallouts are you seeing? We've had a whole week to kind of see where this is going to go. With Atlanta, both in their lineup and specifically in their outfield.
Yeah. Adam Duvall's played every day. Every day since Acuña went down. He's played more days than Jared Kelnick has. Now, they faced a lot of lefties, where we probably would have seen Duvall anyway in those days. And that was versus a lefty that we did not see Kelnick. But I do not think that Laureano is the answer. I think you're exactly right. It's a depth move in case they need him before they can make another move. I think it's Adam Duvall every day and Jared Kelnick nearly every day until they make a move, which I think they will, but we have a couple months before the deadline. And I think Atlanta, you know, the Phillies have pretty nice lead on them in the division, but I don't think Atlanta's in jeopardy of not making the postseason at this point. So they do have some time, but I think that they will make a move, bring somebody else in of a higher caliber than Laureano. Until then, we're going to see both Duvall and Kelnick almost every day.
I mean, the thing that stood out to me the most, and we kind of saw this coming in previous injuries and what have you, is of course Michael Harris, second batting leadoff against righties. Ozzy Albies hitting in the leadoff spot against all those lefties that you mentioned earlier. You're right, they have seen a whole lot of lefties in the last week and a half, which is you know, makes things it gives us more data to work with to see how they're actually going to react to these on a regular basis, so we get more of an opportunity to see the patterns. And every single lefty has seen Albies at the top, and every single righty has seen Harris at the top, so they have some consistency there. So we'll see if we can continue to see that. Harris going, you know, right back down to the seventh spot when he's facing that lefty, though.
Other than positions in the lineup, losing Acuña has not changed Atlanta's lineup philosophy.
Right.
there's been one player not play every day over the past five games, and that's Sean Murphy. They gave Travis d'Arnaud one start versus a lefty over the last five games. Everybody else has played all five.
Yep. It's just a matter of where in the lineup they're actually going to be put. Yeah. Atlanta and making
fairly standard as well.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah. I mean, for each time, it, yeah, you like you mentioned, at least at the top of the lineup, yeah, you're seeing that consistency against each handedness as well. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the ball, Atlanta making another move this week, calling up pitching prospect Spencer Schwellenbach to make his MLB debut. And he looked pretty good in his first outing in a major league uniform. Do we expect, like, this is what we were getting every week last year. We were getting some other pitcher, some other prospect. Most of the time it was a pitcher making their MLB debut and doing just enough to get us excited to spend all of our fab, Kevin. This is a, you know, they've had a lot of young pitchers come in and out of their rotation in the early going of this season. Does Schwellenbach, like, does he stick? Are we spending all our money on him? This is a, you know, Atlanta is not leading the division, like you mentioned, but this is still a good win opportunity for chasing these wins. Is this somebody worth chasing in this opportunity that we see forth for Atlanta?
It is for me. I like what I see with Schwellenbach, both in the minors, both in the effectiveness of both a fastball and his slider. And I think I like him better than some of the other Braves pitchers we've seen in this situation over the past couple of seasons. I don't know what the fab bids are going to be like. I feel like this is one of the best young pitchers we've seen become available to us this season. Getting up there in line with many of them that we did see last season that you're referring to. But I don't feel like we've heard nearly as much about him. I'm afraid that's kind of a trap. I'm afraid the prices are going to be high and I'm getting sucked into not bidding enough. So I think I'm going to bump mine a little bit. You know, I'm always on the low end anyway. I think he's going to be more popular than what it seems like with what we've been hearing. Correct me if you've heard his name more often, Adam, but I haven't heard his name that much throughout the season, other until right now when we knew we were going to see him at the major league level.
No, this reminds me a lot of Tanner Bibee from last year, where just Tanner Bibee, you know, good prospect, you know, had some pedigree, was on lists and all that, but you didn't get the same excitement when it happened, when his debut happened, because you just weren't thinking about him. Right. You weren't kind of
expecting. We did on Sunday night. Well, yeah. So are you expecting $300 bids? Is that what you're saying?
But yeah, he was that same, like that same level of excitement in comparison to all the other prospects we were seeing at the time. And then the expectation of whether or not he would stick in the bids, but in the rotation he did. And so, you know, I'm kind of equating that situation right now with Schwellenbach, who obviously is a good prospect. You know, I think he's listed as the Atlanta's number three overall prospect in their mm-hmm. system on most lists. And so it's just a matter of whether or not he's going to stick. And you mentioned, like, you know, he's right up there with like some of the like one of the most talented or highest rated prospect pitchers that we've seen this year. I'm going to go ahead and move the outline a little bit just so I can throw in Christian Scott, probably, you know, the top one so far that we've seen. A lot of us kind of expected him to start in the Mets rotation out of spring training. That didn't happen for whatever reason. But now Christian Scott is being sent down by the Mets, along with Brett Beatty prior to their trip to London. And, you know, the logic here is that, you know, the Mets don't need that many starters with all the travel and all that, and they want to get their bullpen up. On top of that, it gives them the opportunity to, you know, limit his innings a little bit more, all that good stuff. It seems a little too opportunistic at the moment, but at the same time, I don't think most of us are expecting him to be down that long. You know, as soon as the Mets come back and they're kind of settled in, he'll be that first call back up once that, you know, that time period. At the send down, unless there's an injury, it's 10 days or 15 days. I forget which one, but he's got to be down there for that while. But do you expect to see Scott back up after the minimum as soon as the Mets come back? And this is the rub that you get with these prospect pitchers. There's never a guarantee that, one, they're going to work out, and then, two, that they're going to see consistent playing time. We talk about this with hitters all the time. It should be true for prospect pitchers as well. Does it make you worried about other prospect pitchers, even though they're doing well, like the Jared Jones and the Paul Skeens of the world, and then anybody else that might get called up?
No, I it may not be when he's first eligible to come back, but as soon as his spot in the would-be rotation, I think this is nothing more than they're playing two games in 5 days, right, due to travel. I think that's it.
And it makes a whole, it does make a lot of sense in that strategy. Like, you're playing those two games, just bulk up your bullpen and, you know, get
a couple extra hitters, extra bullpen guys. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's go. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's see. Then one call up that did happen, and we'll get to the Cubs a little bit later as well, but we'll start with their call up here. They bring back Pete Crow Armstrong into their major league lineup. Is there playing time for him at the major league level? And do you care, even if there is?
I do care. And Craig Counsell tells us that there is. He says Cody Bellinger is going to be playing more first base and more corner outfield, and that Pete Crow Armstrong is going to be the near everyday center fielder. Or that's not how he phrased it. I shouldn't say that. He said he's going to get much more significant run this time around, is what he said. So when a manager at that point blank talks about playing time, yeah, sometimes it was BS, but I tend to listen when the manager's that point blank telling us what we're going to see. So I like the way it sounds, and I do care. He wasn't back down very long, but you know, lots of times these guys just a quick reset. Let's try this again. I like what we've seen out of Pete Crow Armstrong throughout the minors. I picked him up in spots when he came up the first time, dropped him in a couple, held him in a couple others. Glad where I did. And I'm probably putting bids back on him again where I did drop him.
Yeah. I just wanted to see if, there were a lot of drops. He's 18% rostered in the main event. So those who, followed suit with you when he got called back up and then got sent back down, looks like, followed suit and made those drops. So he's readily available in most situations. Check for that. And he has started in center field in the eighth spot in the Cubs lineup in each of these two games that he has been back with the team. So Craig Counsell keeping to his word, at least in the very short term thus far. All right, we got to end this first news section with a couple of injuries for some hitters, unfortunately. Let's go to San Francisco first and go. I feel like we just talked about Marco Luciano moving back into the starting shortstop position, and then he hits the IL with a right hamstring injury. Casey Schmidt comes right back, returning to the lineup, or at least to the roster for the Giants. Casey Schmidt, does he line up to be the starting shortstop, or take as much of that time as he possibly can and run with it? And again, do you care at this point?
I think it's only against lefties that we're going to see Casey Schmidt. It's pretty obvious to me, at least so far, that right now they want to give Brett Wisely a chance here at least against right-handed pitching. And yes, 26 plate appearances, the smallest sample size out there, but he's hitting 400 and he's got a home run and a stolen base. He's gonna make it hard for them to not allow him to continue getting an opportunity, at least in the near term, versus right-handed pitching. So I'd be more interested in him than Casey Schmidt.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, the short side of the platoon is never something you really want to look at, and Schmidt wasn't exactly wowing us in his last stint as well. Going to Detroit, Kerry Carpenter, he hits the IL, and he brings back fan favorite Akil Baddoo into the mix for the Tigers. Baddoo, is this more anything more than a platoon situation that he's going to walk himself into, or can he force his way back into his glory days when he first made his MLB debut with the Tigers after being a Rule 5 pick?
I don't know if we're ever going to see a run like that out of him. Oh my God.
It's like Aquino, Baddoo. Like, these are the names.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. But he does have some power in spite of the strikeout rate and some speed. So if he is going to play at least against right-handed starting pitching in 15 team leagues, that he could be a value to some teams, not everybody. But I think he's definitely somebody to consider in 15 team leagues where you need an outfielder, where it might not be really specific on whether you'd rather have power or speed, a little of each. He probably leans a little towards the speed side, but I think, and that the caveat with many players like this, hopefully you have a stable batting average if you're going to add somebody like Akil Baddoo. But I think for the, at least the near term here, he's probably playing at least against righties.
All right. And then, of course, Kerry Carpenter on the IL with a lumbar spine stress fracture. I don't necessarily expect to see him back after the minimum stint on that IL as well. So hopefully he can get through that and come back out on the other side healthier than ever. But, you know, just consider the time frame on that lengthier than the minimum 10-day. Stint. Last one here, Kevin. Lars Nootbaar hits the IL, and we see Jose Fermin take his place on the roster there. Can Fermin actually get in there? And is this a situation where Nootbaar, who is, you know, just everybody's, you know, darling, fantasy darling at one point or another, is this a situation where you're going to hold on to him, or you're just cutting bait?
I'm not going to hold him anymore. I was holding out hope that I might be able to hold him. But Ole Mormol on Friday has stated that he does expect him to miss several weeks. When the manager says several weeks, it's at least several weeks. So unfortunately, several
means different things to different he's people, gone. Of course.
Yeah.
Jose Fermin, can he find his way into that lineup? As you know, St. Louis is kind of, you know, moving a lot of parts around, trying to figure out what works or doesn't work.
You know, I know he's still not hitting home runs, but I'm ready to see Jordan Walker get another shot here. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. But you know, this would create some shuffling around if Fermin is going to be the one for one Nootbaar replacement. Dylan Carlson's still there. I mean, they have players. St. Louis underperforming once again, in spite of a couple of home runs out of Goldschmidt and Arenado earlier in the week. So I don't have any interest in Fermin, unfortunately, at this point. I just don't see where they're going to get him in there. I guess they could start moving some people around, but most of this lineup has been pretty set, at least in the positions that they've been playing. You know, Brendan Donovan can move back and forth between outfield and infield, and that can help make Fermin be the answer for Nootbaar, but I don't see a whole lot here. And the way St. Louis's offense, in spite of the fact, this is really interesting, a little side note here, Adam. Over the past 3 weeks, St. Louis is the second best hitting team in baseball, according to WRC+. And that blows my mind.
Yeah.
Because I've watched some of their games and they don't look like, even over the last 3 weeks, I know they've had more moments. I mentioned the home runs by Goldschmidt, Arenado. They still don't look good. And then I saw their BABIP and I thought, oh, there we go. So, yeah, that St. Louis's offense, in spite of being very good over the last 3 weeks, is not something I'm really interested in getting a part of quite yet. We're getting close to the point where it's going to get hot and humid. It's going to be hot and humid every day in St. Louis. So when St. Louis is at home, that ballpark becomes much more hitter friendly. I do become more interested in St. Louis players as the season gets into the summer, typically. But I don't think Jose Fermin is my guy.
It's not the answer. Sure. All right. Well, that was a whole lot of news. We got some more news items ahead. I kind of lumped them together. They have a little bit of a theme to go with each other, but just know that there was a whole bunch of other news that we didn't talk about, and you should be listening to the First Pitch podcast to get all of your information on a daily basis through the one and only Casey Bubba during the week and then Jake Crumpler on the weekends. They break down all the news highlights and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. Of course, Nick Pollock has you covered on the pitching side with his weekday daily plus pitch podcast. He highlights every starting pitching performance from the day prior and looking ahead at the next day's starting pitching slate. So look for your streamers in those situations. And if you are a PL Pro member, you should be listening to the SP Fab Forecast, and that is Nick Pollock's pitching only Fab recommendation podcast. Make sure you're listening to that in addition to Kevin and I here on the Wire. Just a moment. We are going to talk a little bit more about some news items that revolve around some minor league IL stints, and injuries from there, and whether or not we should be considering continuing to stash said players for an expected call-up, or if this is something that we need to turn the other way on. We'll get to all that just after this break. All right, Kevin, we've got more injuries to talk about, as I alluded to earlier, because we just can't get enough of it, unfortunately. This time, though, I've got four guys here that have sustained injuries, some recently, some over the last couple weeks, but they are hitting the minor league IL, or at least just rehabbing their minor league injuries at this stage. Some of them have made their debut. Some of them have not quite made their debut in major league level, but they're still players that have been or continue to be rostered at the highest level. First and foremost, let's go with the one that is rostered in more leagues than anybody else. And I'm talking about Junior Caminero of Tampa Bay. He is rostered in 100% of Tampa Bay, of the main event leagues. And he now has a grade 2 left quad strain, and he will be out at least 4 to 6 weeks, as it's been reported. We'll just go down the list here, Kevin. 4 to 6 weeks, as we talked about earlier with other players, long time to be out. And I mean, we can't possibly still be stashing Caminero in these situations, can we?
No, not unless you're in a league with an unlimited IL. Yeah, none of the industry leagues or leagues that I play in. I am in a CBS league where we have an unlimited IL. In a league like that, sure, absolutely. And it's a keeper league, but that's completely different. We're typically talking redraft leagues here on the Wire. And yeah, 4 to 6 weeks he's out, and he was still in the minor leagues. We're talking at least 3 months. And like you just said, well, there's only 4 months left in the season. I kind of doubt we see him at all this year, unless it's just a brief cup of coffee in September. Now, unfortunately, he was a guy I was trying to stash in a couple spots.
Yeah, like, I mean, you're not the only one. He's 100% rostered. And he hasn't made
his, popular guy.
He hasn't made his 2024 debut yet. Of course, he makes his MLB debut last year toward the end there, but I tend to agree in this situation. It's at this point, especially the way Tampa has been playing and in that division, you know, he comes back and then he has to rehab that. Again, we're talking the end of July at the earliest based on this initial timetable, rehabbing and making that, getting that call up maybe after the trade deadline, after the dust has settled there, is a possibility. But at that point too, it's like, are you holding for 2 months to possibly get 2 months worth of production that you don't know what is going to, you know, what it's going to be at that point?
The only guarantee in fantasy baseball is that there are not any guarantees, but I guarantee that Junior Caminero does not get 96 at-bats this season.
The 96 is a very specific amount. Oh, because then the
he has 34 in his career, so he's still a rookie.
He'll be rookie eligible next
season. Unless he gets 96.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Well, let's go to Baltimore. Kobe Mayo is dealing with some fractured ribs. This is not a new injury, but we got some positivity behind it, where he's got a timetable that's been cut down from months to weeks, which obviously is a positive thing. We've seen the second base situation, or the infield situation at the Baltimore level, at the major league level in Baltimore, be fluctuating, with obviously Jackson Holliday making his debut and then being sent back down. Jorge Mateo is doing positive things now in that infield. Obviously you have Henderson and Westbrook, who's dealing with his own injuries at the major league level, but Kobe Mayo, part of that Norfolk tide, offensive explosion at times, still being stashed away in, I think, 7% of leagues in the main event. So just a handful of leagues still holding on to there. Not a question about whether or not you should be holding him still, but do you expect Mayo to make enough of a recovery, similar to what you just talked about with Caminero, where you're considering him a late season call up at this point, or is it kind of just pushing that to the side and expecting him to be up in 2025?
Yeah, I would say it was very similar situation to Junior Caminero, except in the aspect that we have talked about this extremely crowded Orioles organization. Right. You talked about Jorge Mateo has been holding his own. He's showing us his speed again. We're getting stolen bases out of him. If he falters or gets injured, or they just decide it would be better, we probably do see Holliday again at second base first. So I think it's very similar. However, we keep talking about Baltimore could make moves. With all of these amazing prospects they have, they could move somebody, whether it's moving Mayo or moving someone else to give Mayo a spot to fortify their pitching staff or their bullpen or other spots on the diamond. That's the only caveat. Other than that possibility, which I would keep an eye on for the next 2 months and be ready to pounce, but unless we see a move like that, then it's a very similar situation to Caminero, I think.
Sure. And obviously Mayo not having made his debut yet either, you know, he's got a little bit more wiggle room as far as keeping that rookie eligibility going into next year. But same time, you got to wait for the dust to settle in Baltimore before you can see if there's actually going to be space for him. Staying in the greater DC area, Maryland area, the DMV, we have the Washington Nationals prospect James Wood. He made a lot of noise earlier in the week as Twitter was kind of abound because he got pulled out of the fifth inning in his game in AAA, and it was like no word as to why. I was like, oh, he's getting called up. It doesn't usually work that way. Usually you don't get pulled in the game unless you got traded or unless you're injured. You don't usually be like, hey, you're getting called up, you need to stop playing right now. It's like, no, just he'll finish the game and then we'll you just take him off the roster. So I guess that should have been the first kind of clue. But yes, he's not getting called up. He's actually suffered a hamstring injury earlier in the game and he got pulled. I think it was in the fifth inning or something like that. He's being placed on the AAA 7-day IL. Not sure on the length to expect him to be out here. But James Wood, somebody that is, you know, minimally rostered as well. In the main event, we got 65% of leagues rostering him. And for some reason, there's 2% of the leagues that are actually starting him. But, you know, maybe they got really excited about that when he got pulled out of the game and they had to get him in their lineup. again, this is somebody, though, like from all accounts that I'm hearing or seeing, the injury is not major. It's just kind of precautionary. Do you expect to see Wood up and would you continue to stash him even in a situation where you don't have IL spots? Doesn't matter. You can't even in the spots where you don't have IL spots. He's not eligible to put into your IL anyway because all these guys are on the minor league IL unless you play in a very specific league that allows that, which I have not played in yet.
Yeah, it's crazy. James Wood, 21 years old and a 174 WRC plus at AAA. You know, when you do the age equivalence there, that's an over 200 WRC plus for an age appropriate player at AAA. Insane what he's doing. But with this injury and with the team context for Washington, who, as we talked in the offseason, could be a team that had some fantasy value, could be better than we thought, score some runs. That has come to pass, but they're not a contender. So they're not going to push him. I think James Wood, they get him healthy, they get him back into playing every day, and it's one of the guys that we see when they know he's not going to lose that rookie eligibility for next season, right? The end of August, early September, and he for sure will not get 130 at-bats.
Yeah, you know, that's got to be the number one, obviously, concern in Washington based on their current situation. So it's one of those things where, you know, 65% of you playing in the main event, holding on to Wood. If you needed a sign that this wasn't going to happen and this,
yeah, you know, there was a chance prior to the injury. Sure.
I'm not saying holding him at that point. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. But it's just, you know, we don't know what teams value most at the time. Maybe the Nationals would have thought it would be great to sell out the ballpark for a few games this summer and call him up. But yeah, now that that's out of the picture and he probably wouldn't be available until towards the end of July into August anyway, they'll wait till the end of August.
Fair. All right, we go a couple of pitchers here that have one of them sustained an injury earlier in the month and one of them just got pulled recently. Jackson Jobe, or I think it's Jobe. I was looking this up just before, make sure I pronounce that right. So please correct me if you guys are watching at home. But Jackson Jobe of the Detroit Tigers organization, AA, he is set to throw a bullpen session on Saturday. That's tomorrow as we're recording this, yesterday if you're listening to this on Sunday, as he battles back from his hamstring injury he sustained at the start of May. This is a good sign. This is the first one we're talking about where this is a positive sign. He's still at AA, though. A lot of expectations across the industry, the fantasy industry at least, crossing his fingers and hoping they see Jobe get the call for Detroit. I know it was something that Nick Pollock was talking about earlier in the season, expecting this move or at least wanting Detroit to make this move at this point. One of the, if not the current top pitching prospects, still not to make their MLB debut now that, you know, Skeens is up and all that. Is this somebody that you're keeping a very tight eye on, if not stashing? 2% rostered in the main event, so not somebody that's being stashed by a whole lot of people. I'm going to double check that. 7% rostered in the main event. So not a lot of people are stashing him at the highest level. But are you still watching this intently with the expectation that we do see him this year for the Tigers?
I am. And it also depends on what the Tigers are doing at the major league level, obviously. 3.5 out of a wild card spot right now. So as long as that stays, you know, within 4, 5, even 6 games, I think we probably do see him, Joby, sooner rather than later. And I think he is worth a stash where he's available. If he was being stashed and was dropped in a league, I think this is a move the Tigers could make relatively soon if they do believe that they can make a run at a postseason spot here.
Yeah, it'll just be a matter of, you know, obviously he has that bullpen and he can make his way back from that. And then do they have him spend any time at AAA, or is this a jump right up, skip AAA, go right to Detroit? So be curious to see how the Tigers organization handles that situation. We've seen plenty of players in the last couple of years jump right over AAA, especially pitchers.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be too surprising. Last one here hits a little close to home, as he's like the only pitching prospect I have in my minor league system on my dynasty league, and that is Cade Horton, who hasn't been performing terribly well, at least from the service numbers that we see, that actually matter in the last couple starts. But he is getting sent to Chicago, but not to join the Cubs, but because he is dealing with his own injuries. And he left his last Triple A start with lat soreness. So if you're stashing Horton, which not, again, at this point, not a lot of people are doing, and maybe it's a combination of his recent production at AAA and the fact that it's just taking the Cubs longer to call him up. And maybe it's also the success of Ben Brown he had in his last start. The necessity might not feel like it's there. Only 2% of main event raw leagues have him rostered still. Are you still holding out hope for Horton, or does this injury kind of put the nail in the coffin for what you would expect him to be called up and actually produce at the major league level for the Cubs?
I don't think we're going to see Horton anytime soon. Now, we may still see him this season, depending on how the Cubs perform and if they're still in the race and how he comes back from this injury, but they're not going to rush this. We don't even know any more news yet. At least I haven't seen anything reported since he left the start on Wednesday. And that's kind of the way you were referencing it as well. He's going to be checked out in Chicago. We don't anymore yet. We don't know much more yet. His lat hurts and he left a start and he's going to get checked out. So it's probably something that'll be at least a few weeks before we see him back in the minors, we could see him, you know, August, September, if the Cubs are still contending. I kind of expect we would, as long as things go well with this being a short-term injury and rehab going well. That's a lot of ifs. Once again, we don't know anything yet. But for any type of redraft league, unless you have those IL spots we talked about earlier, this just isn't something I can hold. Even if we don't know anything else prior to Sunday night, if I haven't rostered, I got to let him go.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I think the only solace I take in this is the fact that they, you know, are taking the time to bring him to Chicago to see, you know, the professionals that they have at hand, at that level of the organization. This, you know, the Iowa, not that far from Chicago, relatively speaking, but also not that close. It's not like there's a lot of teams out there. Yeah. So good on them. You know
what? It's the same distance from Omaha to Kansas City.
Is it?
Okay. So ask Edward Olivares how long it takes to get there.
I'll get that. Our in-house expert on driving that distance. All right. Well, that a lot of minor league injuries to consider if you are stashing, if you are in a league where that made sense. It may make a little bit less sense for some of these guys to consider moving forward as we, you know, cross the third mark of the season and head closer and closer to that halfway mark in a few weeks. So we will, let's get into some recommendations, Kevin, for Fab that we can actually help us this week and not something we have to worry about for 4 to 6 weeks down the line. We'll get into those right after this. All right, we're back. Of course, you're still listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings, and we are going to get right into these Fab recommendations for the 11th Fab run of the 2024 season. Kevin, we need some power, home runs, RBIs. That's the first categories we always hit up. So who's out there now and who are you actually interested in?
I really like Jock Peterson this week. In 15 team leagues, that doesn't help much. He's 98% rostered in the main event, but he's only 26% rostered in 12 team RotoWire online championships. That means he's going to be even less than 26% rostered in many other 12 team leagues that may not have five outfielders, middle corner, and UT. And Arizona faces 6 out of 7 right-handed pitchers this week. Jock Peterson is his old self, crushing right-handed pitching, not playing at all, usually, against left-handed pitching. So that's what we like to see is a schedule like this. Arizona has been really streaky in terms of the handedness of pitching they've seen this season. It seems like it's 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 7 righties or at least 3 or 4 lefties. It hasn't been in between. So we haven't been able to use Jock Peterson. We haven't seen him. I think he only has like 130 plate appearances, something like that. So it's due to that schedule. So it's nice seeing this right-handed heavy perspective starting pitchers coming at him for this coming week. Nelson Velasquez, you know, he hit 17 home runs and less than 200 plate appearances for Kansas City last year. I was one of many that really liked him coming into this season. He started out 2 home runs in the first 5 or 6 games. Everything went great. He went 40 games without a home run and hitting right around 200, barely over 200. Well, over the past couple of weeks plus, like 15, 16 days, 5 home runs, hitting 250. I know that's a short sample. I know he got 2 of those home runs in 1 game. I know all of this, but watching all of the Royals games, Nelson Velasquez finally looks really comfortable at the plate, and he's available in over half of 12-team leagues. Again, not available in many 15-team leagues, but a few more than Jock. He's 93% rostered in the main event, Nelson Velasquez. I was really looking for someone with more availability in 15-team leagues, and there's just not much out there, especially with the way some of the matchups are working out for this week. I know he only has 2 home runs on the season, but there is a favorable schedule coming up for Joey Meneses. And if I'm really desperate in a 15-team league for some power, and I am in a couple of them, somebody like that is somebody I'm going to be forced to take a chance on, because I can't just continue to fall behind in home runs without at least trying to do something about it.
I mean, that's the key right there. It's like, you got to force yourself to make the moves, the force yourself to be put into an uncomfortable position, where you're actually adding guys. You're like, I never saw myself adding this player, but it makes sense at the moment. I gotta make those moves, especially if you're, you make those moves more so when you're in like 7th or 8th place than you do when you're in 14th.
Oh, absolutely.
Place, right.
Absolutely. Ariel Cohen talks about this all the time. The later you get in the season, the more risks you will take you're running out of time. Right. The first thing of the season, we're starting to run out of time. Right.
And then of course you mentioned Nelson Velasquez. I gotta give a shout out to Sarah Sanchez, where her tweet from a couple of days ago, just basking in the fact that you know, not basking is not the right word.
Those tweets have been going on for almost a year since that trade happened.
This is the fact that the Cubs lost them to the Royals in that trade. And now she has to watch it happen from afar. But, you know, you can still root for the player. And Sarah's really good about that. Shout out to Sarah once again. All right. Let's get into some speed options out here. You talked about Jorge Mateo showing us some speed, showing us some love in general. Not one of the options you're going to have 97% rostered in the main event now. Probably more readily available in your 12 teamers. So, you know, just keep note that he's still doing positive things and doesn't look like that opportunity is going to go away for him. But give me something more readily available in most other leagues, Kevin, in the speed department.
Yeah, and as I mentioned every week, all of the guys that we typically mention in this specific category are guys I continue to be interested in where they are available. You mentioned Jorge Mateo is not available in many spots any longer. Dairon Blanco, people are cutting bait. He didn't get the playing time that we had seen over the previous week or two. The Royals didn't face any lefties, and they didn't need a pinch runner late in games. So I think he's fine. The situations just didn't present themselves this week. You know, I first was looking at Sean Bouchard, somebody we talked about earlier in the season. We talked about him in the offseason when he got sent down, didn't make the opening day roster. We talked about him again when he got called up. And then he didn't perform well. We saw Jordan Beck come up and kind of take his playing time away. And then Jordan Beck is now injured. All of a sudden, Sean Bouchard's playing nearly every day again. And over the past several games, they've cut him loose on the base paths a little bit. Three stolen bases in the last three games. Two of them came in one game, so he didn't have a stolen base each of the last three games. Excuse me, I was looking at RBI right there accidentally. The stolen bases, two of the last three games as well. I was just looking at the wrong number. It looks like Sean Bouchard is getting another opportunity in Colorado. What I like about that is it's coming at a nice time, as Colorado has a seven-game week coming up. However, four of the seven are on the road. Now, they have a abbreviated homestand. It's only three games, so I don't know if we'll see the full-blown Rocky Road. We're just going to see the Rockies, who aren't very good, but some days are performing much better than we expect them to. They've put up some runs, not consistently, but on certain days. So with a seven-game week, three of them at home, only three of them being at home, so I don't think there's as much a Rocky Road effect when they head to St. Louis for four. I think Sean Bouchard's going to get some opportunities this week to steal some bases.
Nice. I mean, when we talked about Bouchard earlier in the season, getting more, I grabbed him in a couple places and I found myself holding on to him for whatever reason for the most of that time. And at least in one,
I have a mix. I've dropped him in some, and I think I still have him on maybe one roster. And I'm glad I do, because it's going to save me. I don't think it's going to take much money to get him back.
Sure.
I don't think people are very interested. But I kind of, maybe I'm talking myself into it, but I like this schedule that I think is going to keep people away.
Fair enough. All right. And yeah, of course, you're not looking for the hitter situation. You're here. You're looking for speed. You don't necessarily need to be in Colorado for that. And, you know, in the second half of the season, the first half of the week. Second half of the week. As we get into those schedule notes, as we look for some opportunities out there, Kevin, we got only a handful of teams with a seven-game work week ahead of them. Baltimore, Toronto, Washington, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Arizona, Colorado, and San Diego with seven games. Four teams with multiple off days this week. Tampa Bay, Miami, the New York Mets, and Philadelphia all have five games. The New York Mets and Philadelphia both are off Thursday and Friday, as they have their London series on Saturday, Sunday. So still one day on each part of the NFBC lineups change. But you know, in those other formats, just keep an eye on your Thursdays and your Fridays specifically, being that weird off day for them. Colorado and Cincinnati, both those teams that have seven games, but always good to know where they're going to be. Colorado is, they have three in Colorado against Cincinnati, and they go on the road for the four games to end the week at St. Louis. So yeah, the humidity factor may be getting a little bit better in St. Louis, but still not going to be Colorado. Cincinnati, three at Colorado. Doesn't get much better than that if you're not going to be in Cincinnati. And four at home versus the Cubs. So very positive hitter-friendly environments for the Reds hitters all week long, regardless of home or away situations. So with all that in mind and anything else you want to consider, Kevin, who's got a good opportunity ahead of themselves besides Sean Bouchard?
Yeah, I could have used him in this category very easily. Like I said, I had originally considered and went looking for him for the power category, but it was all based on opportunity with that schedule, as I said. I really wanted to find somebody from the Cincinnati Reds to be my opportunity, because they have three games at Colorado and then four games at Great American Small Park. I know the offense has been struggling a little bit, and this is the type of week that a team like Cincinnati needs to really get going. And I was a little surprised at first at the rostership percentages of some of the guys near the bottom of the lineup. Will Benson, still 100% rostered in main events. Jonathan India, 95%. But you know who's been the everyday DH? We talked about him earlier in the year. We haven't talked about him much since, but all of a sudden, he's the everyday designated hitter for the Cincinnati Reds, and he's 0% rostered everywhere. Nick Martini. He's my opportunity guy for this week, going to Colorado, back to Great American Small Park as the everyday designated hitter for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he spent, you know, a good but 2 weeks at AAA after getting sent down and since being back up, has only missed two starts since getting called back up earlier in May, about a week and a half ago. So, yeah, right at the top of the bottom third of the order, batting sixth or seventh every one of those days as well. So even in Cincinnati, most of the time, that's still going to play. And he's putting up decent numbers in that time as well, at least something serviceable to take note of especially when Cincinnati has the schedule that they do for this coming week. So great call there. All right, we got some pitchers to go over here. And we're going to do that right after this quick break. All right, we got some pitchers to talk about. I gotta go ahead and throw an editorial edit in here as more news that you guys listening on Sunday will have been well aware of by now, but just came across the desk for us today. Just now, Torey Lovello came through in Arizona saying that Slade Cecione will actually start on Saturday. So we will not have the extra time to look at anybody else in that rotation before Fab comes through, at least not on Saturday. And then good news on Zach Gallen. He should miss minimal amount of time as his hamstring strain was graded out as a grade one strain, the least severe, according to Lovello as well. And as Nick Picoro on Twitter mentioned, beat writer for the covering Arizona mentioned, he had Gallen did have a strain, the same kind of strain, grade one strain, back in 2021. He only missed the 15 days minimum there as well. So hopefully we'll see Gallen back in action within the 2 week period. But regardless, you're not bidding on him. Who are you bidding on to get us some wins and some strikeouts for this coming week that is going to, you know, help us out at least this week, if not beyond?
Okay, I have a lot of names, just like I did last week. And here's the reason for this. What I've done is over the well, for most of the season for myself, and started bringing up here on the podcast, is I look at the roster percentages of every single pitcher that I expect to make a start this coming week. And I kick off the ones that are automatic no's, and everybody else has some consideration for somewhere. And so I'm going to start with a guy we talked about a couple weeks ago, Albert Suarez. He gets at Toronto this week. My hesitation would be the following week is a two-step, including the Philadelphia Phillies, which is a team that I am really trying to avoid right now with most starting pitchers. Also, a 0.31 home run per nine inning. That's going to come back to bite him in a big way at some point. We don't know when that will be. But at some point, we know that's not sustainable. That what's crazy to me about Albert Suarez is rest of season projections. And I'm certain this has to do with how much they regress that less than a third of a home run per nine innings, right? A home run every three complete games is all he's given up so far this season. Steamer projects him for a 3.76 ERA going forward. The bat projects him for a 4.94. I don't know that I've ever seen a 1.2 run difference in ERA in two different projection systems going forward for a pitcher. So I'm sure it has to do with that home run regression and how big of a factor it is. But at Toronto, the way they've been hitting this season, I know a couple of the players, including Bo Bichette, has been coming around a little bit. So hopefully Toronto's offense gets going. But the way they perform so far this season, Albert Suarez, he's viable, in my opinion. Cole Irvin, same across the board, including with the home runs that he hasn't been giving up, that he will at some point, and a tough schedule going forward. Not the Phillies, but after getting at Tampa this week, which I love, then he's the next 2 weeks versus Atlanta and at the New York Yankees. So Cole Irvin, a guy already rostered 100% in main events, 77% in 12-team online championships, I'd pick him up in those 23% of leagues he's available for the Tampa start. But even where I already have him rostered, I'm probably dropping him next week, knowing that I'm not using him for at least 2 weeks. We talked about Cody Poteet. The problem being it's versus the Dodgers next week at Kansas City is the way that would line up. He's 0% rostered everywhere. If you really need somebody in a 15 teamer, he might be worth a shot. His K minus BB of 20% at AAA and 33 and a third innings pitched, seven game starts. So there is something to look at there in spite of the very tough landing spot. And as we mentioned earlier, we'll get to see him on Saturday. Ben Lively, we've talked about him multiple times this season, 100% main events, still 68% online championships at Miami. Enough said. Ben Lively, where he's available, I'll grab him for that start at Miami this week. I know there are signs, many of them, that he can't sustain what he's been doing, but it's at Miami. Simeon Woods Richardson, available in over half of 12 teamers at Pittsburgh this week. A lot of these teams, Pittsburgh, Oakland, the White Sox, that had been performing and scoring some runs here and there and blowing up our aces even at times, they're coming back to earth. They're not performing like they were. Detroit, another one. Some of these offenses are back to being the offenses we thought we could pick on. Spencer Arrighetti in Houston. He surprised me as rostership here, 77% main events. I thought it'd be a little higher still. Definitely, I thought he'd be more than 4%. I know he wasn't a fixture in the rotation and might have even been sent down, but right back up, and he gets St. Louis. We'll take that. This one's tricky. He's still 100% rostered in main events, was dropped in some 12-teamers. performed horribly to start the season, been much better recently. Hunter Brown is available in 22% of online championships, and he gets the Angels. I will definitely take him against. In fact, here's 3 weeks for Hunter Brown. It appears this can change easily, but it appears he gets the Angels this coming week, Detroit the following week, and the Chicago White Sox the week after that. If we can't use him for these 3 weeks, then he's a drop. Tyler Anderson, a lot of smoke and mirrors. We know this. He is 100% rostered in main events. The results have been there. The underlying metrics have not. It just doesn't look like this adds up. And he is a two-step at home versus San Diego and Houston this week. This is something I brought up earlier in the show. Both of those teams, in spite of their struggles, strike out less than 15% of the time versus left-handed pitching over the last 3 weeks. So be very careful with Tyler Anderson, although I completely understand wanting to get a guy with a sub-3 ERA in there for a two-step against a couple of teams that have struggled. Patrick Sandoval, ditto. He doesn't get the two-step. He gets San Diego. He gets at San Francisco the following week. Same concerns, similar rostership. Actually, he's much more available in 12-teamers than Tyler Anderson. I just got a couple more. Another Angel. Three Angels we're talking about. Three Angels starting pitchers. Jose Soriano, the only reason I'm bringing him up, he's the best of the three, but he is available still in 16% of the 12-team leagues. J.P. Sears, we talked to him about a lot this season. His rostership's really dropped in 12s, where it's down to 32%, still almost fully rostered in 15s, and he gets Seattle this week. At San Diego and at Minnesota for a two-step next week. Dane Dunning in Texas, this one's intriguing. 100% rostered 15-teamers, 50%, even 100%, 50%, between 15 and 12s. Detroit this week. Next week would be tricky because he's at the Dodgers and at Seattle. I love the at Seattle. At the Dodgers is scary, but Dane Dunning, in spite of his, I mean, he doesn't have a bad ERA. He doesn't have a great ERA because he does give up runs every time he runs out there, usually three or four of them. But he hasn't given up over four a single time this season. So maybe I suck it up that Dodgers start. That's 2 weeks away. Definitely love him in the 50% of 12-teamers. He's available for Detroit this week. Another Texas pitcher, Jose Urena, 0% rostered everywhere. We will have to see him before Sunday night in order to be able to fab him. What's tricky with him is we're not really sure what Texas is going to do. Are they going six-man rotation or are they not? Because Roster Resource has it as if they're going to a six with him in it. They also have Gerson Garabito, and that name will come again later. But they also have him coming into the rotation and making it a six-man rotation. So we either get Detroit or San Francisco. I'm fine with either of those for Urena. But then we get either at the Dodgers or at Seattle. There's a huge difference there. So if we get Detroit, I don't want him because that means the next one's at the Dodgers.
Sure.
If we get San Francisco, I do because then we get at Seattle. So that was crazy. We talked about Schwellenbach earlier. I think he's probably the big bid of the week, and I may be interested depending on how high it goes. Mitchell Parker still available in a lot of 12s, nearly half of them. And we'll see him versus Atlanta at Detroit in 2 weeks. Cal Quantrill is somebody I didn't want to even consider until I saw Nick had him on his PL Pro starting pitcher start sit for next week is out. And he's got Cal Quantrill as a probable start, which is the second tier after auto start. Mm-hmm. That shocked me a little bit. I know it's at St. Louis. I probably would not have been interested. Now I am. He's available in over half of 15-team leagues. Another guy, mostly only available in 12s. We've talked about him. The knuckleball is working for Mount Waldron. Love him. And with it being a knuckleball being his primary pitch, I don't think it matters who he's facing. I think Matt Waldron, unless you just have a completely stacked roster, he's pretty much an auto start for me in 12 and 15 team leagues.
As long as he has that feel for the knuckleball, which is a hard thing to say you do have. Yes. It is a knuckleball after all. Then yeah, it's been good. I mean, Cal Quantrill, same thing. He's just continuing to go out there on a regular basis, and he just has the repertoire to be, quote, successful, or to beat Coors, at his disposal. He's not striking, he's not going to strike out a bunch of guys, but if you can trust, weird thing to say, but like, if you can trust anybody in Coors, apparently it's Cal Quantrill. So we can go forward with that. Aaron Geddes is the one that stood out to me. Just, I agree, the fact that rostership not as strong as kind of expected, at least based on what he had done, the fact that, he's coming in and out of that rotation a little bit, but looking forward at his schedule as well, decent matchup next week, as you mentioned, with St. Louis at home, as he gets to skip the Minnesota series. He'll probably miss the Angels, but he'll get that two-step most likely at San Francisco and then home against the Tigers. So that's lines great. Up for then a great, future setup for him as well. And if he doesn't get the two-step, then he'll get the White Sox the following week. If he gets the two-step, he probably skips the White Sox and has to face Baltimore. But that is a situation where we have to deal with it 3 weeks from now, not right now.
Exactly. Speaking of knuckleballs, is there anybody not rooting for David Fletcher? This is amazing.
Oh,
you see, he made his first start. He had been making relief appearances, mm-hmm. and he made his first start for Gwinnett, the AAA team for the Atlanta Braves, last night, and is throwing knuckleballs as one of his pitches. I absolutely love it. I don't think there's anybody that can't be rooting for that.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that Atlanta's been shuffling people in and out of their rotation, come on, make it happen.
Exactly.
Make his way back to the Atlanta Major League roster in a completely different form, his final form. Let's go and get some guys that a lot of names out there for volume. Now we need to hit up our ratios, Kevin. We talked about a bunch of relievers the last couple weeks. Brian Hudson came up a couple weeks ago. He finally looked human this week in one outing, but looked good otherwise. Still got the win. This is what you're talking about. Those wins were going to come, and I think his last two outings did record a win for those, putting them in the lineup as well. Ryan Walker still putting out, not getting high leverage stuff, but he got a win. Got a lot of strikeouts as well, as far as strikeouts per inning in those situations. So is there somebody else out there that fits the bill that we've been looking at that we're not talking about wins and strikeouts, but it doesn't hurt if you're going to give us good ratios and then tack on a couple of those after the fact?
Right. And so the name I have here is Dylan Tate. With the caveat, kind of like with stolen bases, anybody we've talked about all season long, typically still viable, barring injury or completely just lost it since we talked to him. But it's not just Dylan Tate. He's got a 2-something ERA and a 1 whip. So it's really easy to write his name down. But the Baltimore Orioles have not only a 7-game week this week, but another one next week. They're going to be using a lot of these relievers. So, yes, we can vulture wins on top of these ratios we're hoping for. Also, we've seen Dylan Tate get a save. We've seen Siono Perez get a save. We've seen Jacob Webb pitch the 9th inning. We've seen Yonier Cano. We all know him. All of these Baltimore bullpen arms are viable. This is a situation. I know exactly what you're going to say, Adam. Let's see who pitches on Saturday and Sunday and grab the guys who don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what's going to, what it comes down to. But I mean, Ryan Walker kind of proved me wrong on that, where he pitched on Sunday, then pitched on Monday. So yeah, you can still get that back to back. But then you're almost guaranteed to get a Tuesday off day. But yeah, I mean, you want as much volume as you want, as you can possibly get with these kind of pickups, and with the schedule that plays a big part of it. So knowing the Baltimore organization, they know they have these games coming up. So they're not just going to manage in week. They got to start managing it from the start of the week, giving more opportunities from the get-go to these bullpen arms. So good call out there. Let's stay in the bullpen, of course, and looking for some saves. Of course, Evan Phillips, we didn't talk about, did return to the Dodgers, kind of filling that role back at the end of their bullpen moving forward. So get him back in your lineups if you didn't notice that for next week. But anybody else out there that can vulture some saves in situations that aren't as clear cut?
Yeah, Evan Phillips, another one of those situations where we, unless we roster Evan Phillips, it doesn't help us at all. In fact, it hurts everybody else because the pool just got smaller, right? And I don't think there's a whole lot of situations I'm any more or less interested than I was last week. We know the Baltimore situation. We know the Los Angeles Angels. We've talked about those. So I'm looking at a purely spec move here. Robert Suarez is not losing his job, but Jeremiah Estrada has been performing amazingly. Eno Saris has been propping this guy up for a couple of seasons. As somebody make this guy a closer, he hasn't there yet, but he is performing now in the eighth inning for San Diego, as well as we would hope for somebody that we'd like to see take over a ninth inning spot at some point. There's another one of these guys Sarah Sanchez has been tweeting a lot about recently, just like Nelson Velasquez, because now that the Cubs let him go, San Diego's throwing him out there as their setup guy, and he's been lights out. So this is purely a spec where it would probably take an injury. However, it's somebody that can be in your lineup anyway, right? He may get, you know, if they have 3 days in a row of the save opportunity, he could get a save. He might come in and get a win. He's definitely going to help our ratios. Could have used him up in that category. But he would be a spec closer for me, even though I'm putting him in my starting lineup.
Yeah, he can pitch all over as well. He's not just pitching in the eighth. I mean, just today he was first man up the San Diego bullpen.
That's what we want.
Fires and he, it just shows that he's a trusted member of that bullpen, and he's going to get the work. And so he very well can just fit into that ratio category prior to this as well, where you can kind of trust that you know, situation that they're going to put him in is going to be one that he can get out of. So I like the Estrada call out. A lot of value in there, even if he's not vulturing anything specifically. All right, Kevin, let's close it out. You know, it's my favorite category because I know these names that you throw out here are a lot of fun. You already alluded to one of them, so get right into it. Of course, wild card situation for those first time listeners. These are players that didn't fit into any of the categories we talked about already. If you've got the flexibility on your roster, you might consider stashing them. Maybe they don't have the playing time now. Maybe they're in the minors. Maybe, whatever the case may be, Kevin. If you've got the flexibility, who are we looking at?
Yeah, I mentioned Gerson Garabito earlier, and he is 28 years old. He spent 6 years pitching in the minor leagues for the Kansas City Royals organization, and I had never heard of him until 3-4 days ago when he pitched for the Texas Rangers. And so my first thought is, oh, was he a piece in the Cole Reagans deal with
Chapman?
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yeah, with Chapman. Sorry about that. And no, he actually had a stop at with San Francisco's minor league organization in between, but did not pitch in a major league baseball organization in 2022 or 2023. He's out of, basically an article I read said out of organized baseball. Not really. He pitched in the winter leagues in both the Dominican and Nicaragua, but he wasn't pitching in the United States. Two full seasons, completely gone. All of a sudden, this season, Texas signs him in the offseason. He only pitched four innings at Double A, where he was striking out almost two batters per inning. And then he had 26 innings at Triple A, including four starts, where he was still over 10 strikeouts per nine. And a nice walk rate there as well. Let's do the percentages. I like those better than the per nine. 29.4% strikeout rate, 7.8% walk rate for a 21.6 K minus BB. Amazing. Small sample, 26 innings at Triple A. He comes to the Rangers for a spot start. Went 3 2/3 and walked four batters and only struck out two. So his career,
that's his debut, MLB, that's his major league debut. Minus
baby, yep. Now is negative, 12.5%. However, he's throwing 99 miles per hour. He's throwing his slider 92 miles an hour. I think this is somebody that really does have potential to be one of these late blooming, out of nowhere pop up and give us quite a bit of value. We know Texas can use starting pitching right now. They'll have some guys coming back later, but they're a few weeks away. Roster Resource has Gerson Garabito listed as their long reliever. However, they do have him listed as starting again on Wednesday. He gets the Detroit Tigers at home. He's only got to go an inning and a third longer than he did last time to qualify for the win. That's where I'm at. I'm like, give me five innings, go out there, give me three runs or less for five innings. The Rangers can score four or more. That's where I'm at with Garabito, and really keeping an eye on him going forward, because somebody like this, we don't know anything about because he wasn't playing at all. So really going to have to keep a close eye on him. I'm going to be really interested to look more into what Nick has to say about Garabito as we see more performances from him. He's only had the one Major League Baseball performance. And then Jason Dominguez, not going to be available everywhere depending on when you drafted, when we knew the news. So he in some NFBC formats, he's not in the player pool until he comes up. But it's going to be a few weeks. He's already rehabbing, performing very well. In the offseason, I said I wasn't interested in drafting him, and I wasn't. And at the time, we thought it was going to be after the All-Star break around the All-Star break before we saw what we're seeing already right now. He's about a month ahead of schedule, a little over a month ahead of schedule. Now, the Yankees are destroying everybody, scoring 15 runs a game, and don't need him right now. But they do have a couple of guys named Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge in their outfield. So I don't think that lasts the entire summer. I think at some point we will see Jason Dominguez.
Is it the fact that they called him up last year makes me think that, you know, he's quick. He'll be a, you know, as soon as he's kind of ready in the splash that he made, I will not be surprised. Bench
Verdugo for him? That's what it would take. Because they're not benching Stanton or Judge.
No, not when healthy.
Right. You think, but to your point, maybe we do see him earlier. I really don't think we do, but would they let him take Verdugo's spot?
I mean, at that point, because he's going to have to. I mean, see your point.
If he's that good, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so somebody to keep an eye on. This is the time you got to start because you start. You talked about Marte Nueva Marte a couple weeks ago, and I started seeing in every league every week he's getting picked up
more and more.
And he got relatively more expensive each week. We got closer and closer to the end of his suspension. And so if you want somebody like that and you have the flexibility, now's the time to make that jump. All right. Well, Kevin, that's a lot of players to consider. You know, depending on your situation, maybe you have a lot of money to spend, maybe not so much. So it's always good to have options out there. Leave us with many other final pieces of wisdom that we can take into this 11th Fab run of the 2024 season.
I'm really concentrating on my categories right now. I know it's something we talk about all the time. That's how we structure our show. We go category by category. But, you know, we talked last week, Memorial Day, that's kind of a landmark date for a lot of people, how they start looking at things. And I think that's too late in most leagues these days. But it's some people may think it's too early, but I absolutely do not. I think you can get yourself in a real bind if you're falling further behind in certain categories than you realize. And this season has been really weird. ERA is down. WHIP is down. Runs are down. Many aces have gotten blown up. We can't find wins. We have all these starting pitchers that have amazing stat lines, and they have one win on the entire season, right? Chasing wins is just like become the worst. It's been really weird. So category by category may surprise you. And I'm not even talking about where you rank in the category. I'm talking about the actual number, right? If I rank eighth in a category, but the four guys ahead of me have one or two more, I don't care that I'm eighth. I care about where am I sitting, right? And I think I started doing this probably by the end of April, and I think it really can help everybody each and every week. Not, you don't have to do it every day. Some days I do. I'm a degenerate like that, but I think it, at least once a week, every league, look at every single category. And before we start making these fab decisions, right? Like what, why am I going to, why would I go bid on one of these starting pitchers that we have a question mark about if I'm doing fine in all those categories with the ones I got, you know? Of course, we're always trying to improve, but I think we really need, it's still May as of this recording, barely, but category by category earlier in the season, I think is a key to, there's so many things that we go through in fantasy baseball that used to be a big advantage, but now everybody does them. I think category by category earlier and earlier in the season is something we can use to our advantage right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the high fastball. It's like, make those adjustments when you're zigging, when other people are zagging, even though everybody has started zagging. And so you got to make those adjustments as well. All right, guys, that is going to wrap it up for episode 166 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Haston Kevin. And of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. After all that, I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Haston, thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.